But first things first, we are joined by an NFL Network analyst. He spent 8 years as an NFL scout. You can follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks. He is host of the Move the Sticks podcast along with Bucky Brooks. It is available each week. He is a very good friend of the program. He is a three-on-three legend. He is Daniel Jeremiah. DJ, what's going on?
Hey, first of all, man, as someone who grew up in San Diego, there was nobody that was more of a no-doubt Hall of Famer than Tony Gwynn. That was until you got yourself in the Hall of Fame, buddy. Much deserved, and I couldn't be happier for you.
DJ, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot to me, Daniel. Thank you very, very much. All right, that said, and I appreciate it, it is that time of year, the time of year where I'm watching you on social. Well, I always am, but especially now because you are breaking down lots of film. You are listening to lots of Christmas music. How is your life right now?
Well, dude, you know where I live. I'm out in Murrieta, and it's hot out here. It's like 80 degrees outside, and I want fall. So I just crank the AC to make it really cold. I've got a blanket. I've got a coffee. I've got Christmas music, and I've got, like, LSU wide receivers. Like, that's what I did yesterday. It was fantastic.
That is great. And I know you've got Hallmark Christmas movies, too, right? Has that started yet, and have you seen any?
Yeah, dude, I was on the road. I checked into the hotel with the Chargers up in Oakland. And, you know, like, I'm just getting some work done, but I wanted just some background noise, you know. So I just flip on the TV and, like, literally what comes on, it's like a Hallmark movie, which I didn't know there was a difference between Hallmark Channel and Lifetime. Apparently those are two different channels.
Right.
But they're both in the Christmas movie business. Like, that's like the Yankees and the Red Sox, I imagine, in the Christmas movie space.
Man, no doubt.
But Rick Fox was in this thing. I mean, I was sucked in. I watched the whole thing.
Of course he was. Daniel Jeremiah is joining us. So, Daniel, I want to start first with Seattle-San Francisco on Monday. You and Bucky are doing a really cool thing. We are getting into how teams are built. Before we get into that, what did you make of how both teams showed up overall Monday night?
It was awesome, man. I mean, five full quarters of football, physical. Both defensive lines, you know, playing at a high level. Clowney, like, dude, that's the guy that I saw at South Carolina that was just, you know, an absolute freak, and it took over a football game. This year, I mean, trade wise, Jim, you know, I love picks. You know, I'm a draft guy, and I love picks as much as anybody. But the value that the Seahawks are getting for Clowney, the value that Pittsburgh's getting for Minkah Fitzpatrick. The value, even though they gave up 2 ones, that Houston's getting with Laremy Tunsil, these are proven stud players that are having a big-time impact versus picks that you're hoping and wishing are going to be correct. So that's been an interesting subplot. But back to that game, and it was just fun. It was just a fun playoff atmosphere.
DJ, you mentioned Minkah Fitzpatrick. He's been unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you can see what he's done to solidify that back end and what he's done for that Steeler defense. At the time of the trade, though, did you like that trade?
My only question was, okay, it was right after Roethlisberger got hurt. So, you know, my only thinking was, man, if this is it for Ben, you know, having a top 10 pick could maybe help you get the next guy if you don't think Mason Rudolph is that guy. That was my only reservation. Now, Minkah Fitzpatrick, I thought, was a stud coming into the draft. And, I thought he would be really good there. I did not know that he was going to take it up to the level he's at. I mean, he's arguably in the mix. You know, he's definitely in the mix, I should say, for Defensive Player of the Year. And they found a way to win games like the Ravens used to win games back in the day, where you don't have to score a whole lot of points, the defense takes care of it for you. So he's 22 years old. The money's already been paid. They owe next to nothing for the next 2 years. And where they're going to be picking, which is probably going to be outside the top 15, they would never see anybody close to as good a football player as Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us in the jungle once again. DJ, there were a couple of moments in that game Monday night that felt like vintage Russell Wilson, especially that 3rd and 16. If we were to go back, what do you remember about your impression of him when he was coming out of college?
Well, I mean, Jim, first of all, I just went through this the scouting report the other day, and not just the evaluation of him as a player, but reading the background on him. And it was, I forgot some of this stuff. I mean, like, his dad used to wake him up when he was a kid at 6 a.m. every day, and they would go do, you know, baseball drills or football drills. I mean, this kid had a discipline instilled in him at such a young age. And then you go through and read the comments from the coaches at Wisconsin, it was the same thing. This guy's a machine, you know, in terms of how he approaches things. And, you know, he everything, literally in my report, even as a player, I'm like, literally the line was, I love everything about this player except for his height. It was just a tough sell at that point in time. You got a 5'10 quarterback, and you have to go back to Doug Flutie to find somebody at that size who's, you know, always played at a high level. So that was the knock, and obviously, in hindsight, it was a foolish knock. The guy was a stud coming out, and he's done nothing but be a stud his whole NFL career.
We are talking to Daniel Jeremiah. All right, so what about the guy on the other side, DJ, Jimmy Garoppolo? He had stretches of that game where I didn't think he looked that comfortable. Is it something you'd be worried about long-term, or is that more a product of George Kittle was missing the entire game and Emmanuel Sanders missed a big chunk of that game?
Yeah, I mean, there were some drops when you go back and really study it, too. The tape, there were some drops in there that would have helped Garoppolo. There also were some interceptions that were dropped. But I would definitely say the difference, you know, one of the key differences in those two quarterbacks is Russell Wilson's supremely confident. And I don't know that Jimmy's reached that level of confidence yet. We're just seeing it, letting it go. There's a little bit of hesitation with him right now. But, I mean, look, George Kittle comes back, and what he gives him is all that run after catch. That makes a difference. But yeah, well, he's not where he needs to be for them to win a Super Bowl, but he's got time to get there.
Now, as somebody who watches the game with a scout's perspective, what is it about Kyle Shanahan and the way he designs and calls plays that makes him so good?
He's different, man. He's different. He's got the base offense that works, that's tried and true, the stuff that his dad was carving the league up with, you know, decades ago. And then every week there's just these little wrinkles, a lot of times in the run game. And a lot of it's just used to get better angles for blocks, motioning guys, just how they formation. It's just different, man. And when you talk to players around the league, I'm sure you're doing the same thing. The way they talk about this guy, like, it's hard for players to be impressed. And they're like, dude, this guy's a genius. I mean, like, this guy, you know, he knows it's a touchdown when he calls the play. He'll put in the play during the week of practice and tell you this is going to score. Sure enough, that play scores. So he's got a different mind, man.
Which is why I wanted to ask you about him. We're talking to Daniel Jeremiah for a few more moments, which brings me to Pete Carroll. You know, like, Pete can be an easy target for people, DJ, because of all the positivity, all the passion, the energy. You know, people think that it's shtick. But the fact is, you look at that. He's on the verge of a seventh double-digit win season in the last 8 years. So how effective is all that effort that he puts into positivity and mindset?
Well, it's interesting because we were just recording an interview for our podcast. Me and Bucky had Lou Holtz on this morning. And, we asked him about Pete Carroll because Pete Carroll was a GA for him. I'm like, dude, was this guy this energetic as a graduate assistant? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's who he is. So I think why some people might think, that's not real, that's inauthentic. No, that's who that guy was in the 70s when he was coaching with Lou Holtz as a grad assistant. So he is who he is. And Jim, when I look at the way they play, yeah, I see the energy, I see the passion. But, man, they're aggressive. He was like that. You remember at SC, it was like they'd be in games at SC in the first quarter. It'd be 4th-and-2 on their own, like 35, and he's going for it. And just nobody did that. Nobody coached with that much aggression and confidence. And I think that seeps down to your team. I mean, they feel that. They feed off that. And all that success, I mean, as some of these organizations that take so long to rebuild and retool, these guys were in the playoffs in the middle of a rebuild. I mean, they didn't take a break from the postseason. I mean, that's impressive.
You know, I'm watching them pressure the quarterback, DJ, Monday night, and the way they're flying around, I'm thinking to myself, that defense is not what it used to be. They're not what they used to be. And I'm not saying they are, but they're really aggressive, and they're still flying around. You know, you and Bucky are such a great listen, and for a number of reasons. Obviously, both of you have spent time in that league, and you've got the insight and the intel and the background, the experience. Great, great chemistry between the two of you. Something that keeps coming up on this show is culture. Every time I talk to a coach, it comes up in conversation. If I don't bring it up, they bring it up. You and Bucky recently did a really deep dive with James Franklin about building a culture. What was your biggest takeaway from that convo?
You know, it was great. And this is something we've had a chance to talk to so many different coaches about all this stuff. And one of the things James Franklin said I thought was interesting was that, you know, so many people have their kind of your philosophy and what I do at this place. I'm going to get a new job and I'm going to do the exact same thing there. And it's a proven formula and it works and that's how we do it. And he just talked about how, man, before you come in there and beat everybody over the head with your vision of what you want to do, you need to get in there. You need to talk to the players. You need to talk to people around the program. You need to talk to people in the community. find out what they have, what they don't have, what they like, what they don't like, and get a lay of the land, and that's going to help you, you know, kind of cast your vision of what you want to do. And he told a story about getting to Vanderbilt, and they had a dumpy locker room. So when he got there, he talked to a bunch of people, and that kept coming up. So as soon as he got there, the first thing he did is got the administration to say, hey, we're going to get a new locker room. It's not going to cost us that much money. But at least everybody in the program is going to know, I know there's a problem that they've had, and I'm going to get it fixed and solved immediately. And he was like, that gave me instant credibility with them, that he knew I was kind of, you know, I was there on their side. And I think some people look at that and say, oh, that's kind of cheesy, that's kind of hokey. Like, dude, the guy won it in Vanderbilt. Okay? It ain't easy, man. And what he inherited at Penn State was a mess, and they're a perennial kind of top 10 team. So he's doing something right.
Let me finally ask you this. There's been, in terms of prospects, and again, you're breaking down a lot of tape, there's a lot of buzz, Daniel, about LSU quarterback Joe Burrow lately. Back in August, you admitted, well, I mean, you wrote, it's obvious, you didn't have a lot of chance to see him yet. That's understandable. Now you've had some time to watch him and watch tape. What kind of thoughts do you have?
He's really good, man. I was joking with a GM the other day that it's kind of one of those deals where you're like, yeah, what do you think of Joe Burrow? Well, you know, he's pretty good. I mean, I like him, I guess. You know, he's accurate, he's tough, makes good decisions. He can move around a little bit, extend plays. Yeah, isn't that kind of what you want your quarterback to do? Like, what don't you like?
Right.
Like, he doesn't have a huge arm. Who cares? I mean, that's like the knock on him. He just doesn't have a huge arm. But he moves the football up and down the field. He's tough. He makes good decisions, accurate, all that stuff. I mean, all the stuff that makes a good quarterback, this kid has it.
So, final thought, what about here, closer to home, USC true freshman Keaton Slovis? I know he's not, I mean, he's nowhere near draft eligible. Have you watched him very much, and what are your thoughts of him? He looks like he might be a star.
Yeah, I think he's really good, Jim. He came in, and I want to say it was the Stanford game, you know, when Stanford was actually, you know, well thought of at that point in time. They've had a rough year, a lot of injuries, but he stepped in and immediately was like attacking down the field. Like, this was not check down Charlie, you know, freshman in there scared to death. Like, this dude was like, okay, it's my turn, and he let it rip. And he's played like that. Now, he, like BYU, you know, he has some turnovers, and that's expected, but I love the fact that dude, he plays kind of a no-flinch style of quarterback for a young kid. That's not normal. That's fun to watch.
DJ, final thought really quick. David Shaw, you mentioned Stanford. Does he, talking to the people that you talk to and knowing what you know yourself, do you think that he would take a shot at the NFL? And if so, is that time coming soon?
Well, a lot of teams have been interested in him over the years. I think that he can scratch that itch anytime he wants to. I know this is a frustrating year for him up there at Stanford. He loves it up there, though, Jim. So I don't know if he'll ever do it, but I think the opportunity will be there whenever he wants to.
NFL Network analyst, 8 years in an NFL scout. Follow him on Twitter at MoveTheSticks. Check him out with Bucky Brooks for their podcast. He is a friend of the program. DJ, such a great job. Really appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
You're my guy. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you.
You're my guy, Daniel Jeremiah. He is so good. He is so good at what he does.